Ready? Okay. Thank you all. I'm going to call this meeting to order now. I apologize for the delay. David Gans, who normally does the sound for us, is ill today, and so other people, Frank, Laura, Rich, pitched in and did it, and we thank them very much for hopping to at the last minute and helping us have sound and the recording for the archives. I'm going to ask the secretary. At this point, I'm going to ask the secretary to take a roll call.
I haven't seen it before, but I will pass it on to you. Have some fruit and nuts.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to zip through this in the usual order, starting with Agamir. And Agamir is not here. Bernstein. Bernstein is here. Drake. Drake is here. Fest. Fest is here. Futron. Futron is here. Gans. Gans is absent. Goldmacher. Goldmacher is absent. Con Hallinan. Con Hallinan is here. Matthew Hallinan. Matthew Hallinan is absent. Johnson.
Come on.
Johnson is here. Coburn. Coburn is here. Kurzweil. Kurzweil, okay. Kurzweil is not here. He's on his way, apparently. Nor. Nor is here. Pritchett.
Here.
Pritchett is here. Privis.
Here.
Privis is here. Rosenberg. Rosenberg is not here. Okay. Russell.
Here.
Russell is here. Sawyer.
Here.
Sawyer is here. Siegel.
Here.
Siegel is here. Sterling.
Here.
Sterling is here. Aki Tanaka.
Here.
Aki Tanaka is here. Kate Tanaka. Kate Tanaka is here. Turner.
Yes.
Turner is here. Wilkinson. Wilkinson is here. Withers.
Here.
Withers is here. So that's 19 present and a quorum.
Thank you. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda, and you all have the agenda before you. What? Oh, I'm sorry. I have to ask for a motion to excuse the absent members.
Yeah,
I apologize. So the members who requested are being excused are David Gans, Donald Goldmacher, Matthew Hallinan, and Tracy Rosenberg. Okay, is there a second? Are there any objections to excusing these members? Thank you very much. Okay, so now you have the agenda before you. There are two items under new business, the crafts fair and email policy, which involve having people who don't normally come to our meetings come. They have both asked to be early on the agenda, and so I'd like to see if someone's willing to make a motion that we do that. Con. Is there a second? Okay. Is there any discussion on this motion?
Yeah. I'd just like to check with the folks who came here, because it looks like some folks, that's not really convenient for some folks. So I'm wondering if we can make some accommodation. Is there anybody in the audience who wants to speak that...
About an hour and a half. I think. I'm guessing. I don't know for sure. Okay. All right. So there's one person who is here who can't stay that long. Okay.
Can I
see a show of hands of how many people are here to speak under public comments? So that's four.
Just let them go first.
So perhaps we could have public comments first. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. There's four people at 2 minutes each. That's not bad. Okay. So the motion is that the two items move up to directly after public comments. Are there any objections? Seeing none, that's the order of business. So now we need a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any objections to approving the agenda as amended? Thank you. All right, and we have minutes which were distributed. I'm sorry.
Minutes.
Oh, okay.
Second.
Okay, so we have a time limit on board members speaking on any one item. The motion is that be limited to 3 minutes. Are there any objections to that? All right. So by a show of hands, does anyone want to talk about it? I'm sorry. Andrea.
Free speech.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? All right. Let's try and do this by a show of hands. Those in favor of a 3-minute limit, please raise your hands. Okay, opposed? Okay, so the motion passes, 10 yes, 8 no. The minutes are next. Minutes were distributed both by Craig this morning in a paper version, and you all got it on email a couple of days ago. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Yes, Janet.
In item B, the last paragraph, main motion approved. It has 11Y listing of names and then 9Y. So is that correct? Both Ys or?
Point of order.
I'm sorry, yes?
Point of order. My understanding is that we're talking about the minutes of the open meeting and not the minutes of the closed meeting, which
right.
is what...
We have to do the minutes of the closed meeting and closed session, okay? Okay, okay. Thank you, he'll fix that. Okay, are there any other additions or corrections to the minutes? All right, seeing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
All right, it's been seconded. Are there any objections to approving the minutes? All right, thank you very much. Okay, so now we have reached the moment for public comment. If someone would bring me the comment list, I'll call on the speakers as they signed up. The list is on the back table. Okay, first on the list is Les Radke, followed by Daniel Borgstrom. And somebody provide these, yeah, thank you.
The first thing is to remind people that there is another election coming up, and we can all sigh because we know what this means. I've been national election supervisor a couple of times, and I never would do it again, I have to admit. I do want to say that last year the cost of the election was $144,000. That's the cheapest that we've ever had. And so in that sense, that election was good. I know that people had criticisms of Renee, but that criticism can't be of the cost because the cost was down. That's the good news. The bad news is one of the reasons why. There were a couple reasons. One reason is that the membership has dropped, and it dropped when I was first national election supervisor. We had almost 30,000 members that we were sending out our pamphlets to. Last year, it was a little over 20,000. As we reduce the membership, obviously we're going to also reduce the cost. So the question is for the board, how we increase our membership. And one way of doing this that I want to bring up is having one of the things that Andrew has done that I think we really need to look at and appreciate. Many of us have wanted to have a paper newsletter going out to people, informing them about what's happening with the station. With our money situation, that's not possible. So the alternative is to try to get everybody's email who is a member to send out this email to. The email, what? Yeah, 3 minutes. Thank you. I think it's really important to get information out, and therefore what should be done is to look at how to make the email newsletter much more exciting, let's say. I think it's exciting enough, and I think there are things in it that are good. One of the things that could be added, for example, are letters, which we used to have in the old folio, are letters from listeners concerning the email. But I think all of us have to give a credit to Andrew for coming up with this idea and for pushing that we do have a newsletter which goes out to people explaining as much as possible what is happening with people. So when you talk about this, I hope you see this as a very, very positive thing, not a negative thing, and look at it as how can we make that more positive, and give credit to the person who has thought of this, which is Andrew. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Daniel Borgstrom.
I just wanted to remind everyone that in public comments, speakers have 2 minutes normally, okay? Go ahead, Daniel. Sorry.
Okay, I'm Daniel Borgstrom. And I wanted to say something about resources. Out in the capitalist world, we can have infinite growth on finite resources. That's impressive. Here at KPFA, our resources are limited, both in funds and in personnel. There have been people wasting. There have been policies that just wasted our resources in the past few years, just plain, I guess, on the assumption that they're just finite. They're not. Also, the same is true about people. We have some, when we get somebody in KPFA who's really good at doing things, station manager, who's good, let's keep them. Not all station managers have been good. When we get someone that's good, and we have someone good right now, let's keep them. Another person that's really good is... and I can name her, Tracy Rosenberg. There's a campaign to get rid of her. Well, she's extremely competent. I wonder what people have against competence. We lose her, people like her. Who do we replace them with? With somebody who can do the job, who's really super good? Well, the fact is that we have a limited number. We have a finite number of really good people. We have a finite amount of resources. Let's take care of our resources. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Joy Moore, and once again, I want to thank all of you for doing this work. It's not easy, and I applaud you every time I come. I'm amazed at how many of you show up. First, I'm here to support the apprenticeship program, as always, especially Frank. I talked him into running, and I want to support him. We need help with the apprenticeship program. We only have a half-time position, training 14 people twice a week, and we want to bring in a new group. So we need support, however we can get it. I just want to keep it on your mind, no specific. One thing I noticed in Andrew's report is no mention of International Women's Day, which is evidence of the breakdown of communication at KPFA. Carrie and I are working on International Women's Day, but Andrew isn't. So when he does his report, he didn't put it in there, and Carrie's not going to be there for a while. So I want to let you know that we are encouraging programmers to do women-centered programming on March 8th, this Thursday, all day on KPFA. Also, the fund drive, I think, even though it didn't make our goal, the goal was pie in the sky, I think, in this economy. I think we did very well. People stepped up to the plate and tried as hard as they could, and I want to congratulate Maria and Andrew, all the phone volunteers and the OACs, and Carrie for doing the best they could. I've been coming up here for the last few months extolling the virtues of Andrew's leadership and Carrie's too, although I haven't mentioned her much, because Carrie always let us know that it was truly interim for her. She wasn't going to stay around. Andrew has a desire to stay around, and I think he should. Some of the things that he's worked on, along with Maria and the other staff, are developing systems and processes at KPFA. We have none for hiring, for disputes, for scheduling, for any of the things that we need. There were very few structures, and Andrew and Carrie, along with the other leadership staff, have been working on it, and KPFA runs, I think, a lot more smoother in some areas. There still needs to be a lot of work done. All right, I'm just going to let this go. I would like to suggest that if all of you get 3 minutes, that the comment people get 3 minutes, too, in the future. Thank you.
Paula, followed by Virginia, who is the last speaker.
Hi, everybody. I've got everybody a rose here for their dedicated work on serving on this board. Please pass it around. Okay. Yeah, you can choose your colors. I'm still extremely concerned about the sustainability of this station. And as a concerned listener who wants the morning show back so we can get our money back in our coffers, I wanted to ask Tracy today to gracefully resign and make a sacrifice for this station to save a lot of time, money, and energy, because she's been doing manipulations that have been very costly to this station, and, you know, using the email list improperly for which she was censored. And as far as Andrew, having been to 8 meetings last year and observing, I felt that he was very inflammatory and partisan and was not really helping. He should have been, you know, supporting both sides. And so, as much as there's some things about him I like, I certainly wouldn't recommend him for the manager position because of his partisanship. And what else? I mean, and I'm very upset, as many other listeners are, about the stalling of the recall, the misuse of listeners' emails, you know, hiring of costly law firms, financial mismanagement, taking people's retirement money for other purposes, and checks bouncing, and so anyway, I mean, I just wish we could just move forward, spend our time, energy, and money in the things that matter, decentralizing Pacifica, and getting more local control here.
Thank you. Virginia, who is the last speaker?
Hi, starting with the last comment of the last speaker, Pacifica is a network. It could be a great network. And part of the reason that many of the things that the so-called Save KPFA-CL people have come up with in their one-sided, talk about one-sided presentations, is to get the control of for themselves in a very hierarchical way of this network, which they had for many years, and then they started this decentralization idea when they lost control of the national board, despite their having violated the elections for all the years that I've been on the election committee, and I'm sure before. As far as the retirement money, that's been done for years. If you look back at all the budgets, that stuff, that shouldn't have ever been done, but it was done under Brian Edwards Tickert as the treasurer, and it was done way, way back, that stuff about the retirement money being bounced around and bounced around in an not clear way. Many of the managers haven't even been able to get a hold of the budgets from the few little in-club people that hold on to this stuff for themselves. If Andrew was inflammatory, I guess Lem was like triple inflammatory. And the people on the so-called Save KPFA concerned listeners side who support the KPFA Evening News, or excuse me, Pacifica Evening News, and the little shows they do where they have only one side and not their side. The stalling of the recall is partly because this Save KPFA so-called group didn't accept the recall supervisor that was chosen. And, of course, they're not honest enough to say that. So want the morning show back? Well, so did Arlene Engelhardt, and so she slated senior union staff members to go on to that show, but the union prevented that from happening. If you want it, support the people that are there now.
I forgot. I apologize. Okay. I have a mic. And we're going to start with the crafts fair. Jan Etree, who manages the crafts fair for the station, has been kind enough to come, and she's going to give us a report on the crafts fair and be here to answer any questions that any board members may have. Why don't we get... Oh, okay. Here, you have to use the mic.
No worries. Yeah, they do. So you guys can take these. I prepared I'm not used to public speaking, but at the same time, thank you for having me today. I actually prepared something written that I'd prefer to read to you rather than make it up as I go along. So... how's the sound? It's all right? Okay. The primary purpose of the crafts fair is to provide a marketplace for self-supporting artists. I advocate for people who have chosen a lifestyle of supporting themselves through their creativity and self-sufficiency. I'm really going to need my glasses for this.
Sorry to have my back to you.
It's all right.
It's okay.
So not used to this.
That would be me. People who live outside the mainstream residences and workplaces, often off the grid, usually very green and eco-conscious, and always leftists. Crafts fairs, a phenomenon of the 60s cultural revolution, afforded people a viable means of right livelihood, living on the land, often in dwellings of their own making. This is largely true today, although living in the Bay Area, we see more urban artists. Out in the rural areas, craftspeople live close to the earth and make their lives with their hands. In the 23 years that I've been producing the crafts fair, I've come to know hundreds of these folks and to greatly appreciate the place they hold in our society. For instance, their work is antithetical to mass production in offshore factories. In fact, it's all American-made and made by the exhibitors themselves. I am always incredulous at the level of artistry, inspiration, and sophistication of much of the work. I am amazed at the tenacity the artists have of holding on to their chosen lifestyle and profession. It's unglamorous and often below poverty level. They often don't have medical insurance or retirement saved. They live hand to mouth. But it's the life of their own choosing, and somehow it works for them. The experience the visitor to the fair has is of interacting directly with the maker of the work. All of the work at our show is carefully vetted to be original and made by the person exhibiting it. At this event, this concept is held to a high standard. Each booth has in it unique work. At the same time, it must be accessible to the visitor. The marketplace is a two-way street, and the exhibitors know it. In the current economic downturn, artists have to make more items that retail for less money. These are more labor-intensive than larger items, meaning that they are working more and getting paid less. And they have to exhibit at more fairs to bring enough money in to make a living. But they are surviving, and they know how to do that. In 2011, we had close to the same number of visitors that we did in 2010, but in each of the two prior years, we had a 20% decline in visitors. That's overall 40%. It's a perennial challenge to attract new visitors to the fair. The prices of the work seem high. There's not as much disposable income around these days for many people. However, I do believe values are maturing in our society, indicated by the 99% movement, farmers markets, independent bookstores, independent radio, do-it-yourselfers, and buying directly from artists. The artists are depending on sales for their livelihood. The overhead is high, as each exhibitor pays about $500 for a booth space in our event. After all expenses, including studio, materials, travel, etc., each needs to sell at least $2,000 in order to cover the expenses of coming to the show. After that, they start to make wages, their own wages. It doesn't always happen, but let's say they sell that much. We have 220 booths in the show. If each exhibitor makes a minimum of $2,000 just to break even, that's $440,000 in overall sales over the weekend. If there are 5,000 visitors, this works out to each visitor spending at least $100 at the show. Some people spend a lot more. I think it's possible that up to $1 million changes hands over those 2 days. This means the exhibitors can go home and have money to help see them through the winter months till the show cycle starts up again in spring. Visitors come to the fair for one reason only, to buy work directly from the makers. The concourse in San Francisco is centrally located in the Bay Area. There's lots of parking, and we do our best to get them there without driving by having free shuttles from Civic Center BART and Caltrain. They're wheelchair accessible. The whole event is. Many exhibitors come to this event for the experience of what we give them, for how it supports them in their career in ways beyond financial. It's usually the last show of the year for most of them. It's a celebration. That the sponsoring organization is a nonprofit means we are not out to gouge them with their booth fees. There's no other agenda for the fair. It's all about the artist. In the crafts community, KPFA is famous for being one of the only events that do not exploit the exhibitors. We provide a free Friday evening dinner inspired and labor graciously donated by former KPFA apprentice Janet Everett. Thanks to our 200 volunteers, we can give them special attention. This is hugely important. I've distributed amongst you a program from our fair last year, a statement from the business office, email outreach from volunteer Perrine Kelly, and two emails from exhibitors. Please read that all at your leisure, and feel free to keep that. Usually about two-thirds of the exhibitors want to return from the prior year, so the fair has both known and new work exhibited in it. We're anchored in the traditional crafts as well as innovative work, such as that using repurposed materials. Repurposed materials, the work is growing hugely and quickly, from sculpture to glass to jewelry to wearables. Reusing and repurposing is big. My work on the crafts fair is comprised of two parts: recruiting and managing the exhibitors and bringing in the public. Loosely, the booth fees basically cover the expenses of the show, including my salary and benefits. The profit comes from the money we collect at the door from the visitors. So we need two elements for success: exhibitors willing to pay the booth fees and visitors motivated to pay at the door to come in. KPFA loyalty goes a long way to getting people to come to the fair, as do the customer bases of the artists. The third element is making the general public aware of the event and getting them there. We work very hard to attract new visitors, both through traditional outlets and internet promotion. While I am paying attention to the fair all year, my work starts in earnest in June when we initiate the application process for exhibitors. I run a jury of peers to vet who is to be chosen. I do all the contract negotiating. I hire what help I need and supervise them. I do the ad buys. I keep a budget. I contract with the nonprofits, the fair traders, the food concessions, security, etc. I help promote. Over the past three very challenging years, I've condensed the show by excising the live broadcast music performances, which were costing about $12,000 a year. We now broadcast for 2 hours in the morning with lots of mini interviews to whet people's appetites on their way to the event. I do all the graphic design, including formatting the applicants' images for the jury, designing the poster, postcard, ads, website images, and the program I distributed to each of you. These 60-year-old eyes were suffering from strains, so at the end of last year, I bought myself a new computer. It's in my office. I do not expect KPFA to spend that kind of money on me, as indeed it could not afford it. I'm very happy with it. I'm extremely aware of the bottom line. I cut costs wherever possible. I try to come in under budget and save money wherever I can. I try to have a realistic outlook about finances. The business office supports me really well, and I thank them for it. Thank you, Maria and Belinda and Yi. I take my work very seriously and not for granted. Working half-time, making just over $20 an hour, does not a big paycheck make. What makes it work for me are the benefits that are a major part of the compensation for the work I do. You may be asking yourself, why the crafts fair? It's not radio. To which I would respond, you're right, it's not radio. And yet, it fulfills one tenet of KPFA's mission by promoting cultural diversity. It also introduces people to the radio station, thereby functioning as outreach. It appeals to some of our major donors, thereby functioning as development. The radio station is not just the airwaves. It's also the speaker events and the sponsorship of events such as music performances and the Green Festival. All these are places where KPFA gets out into the community, where new listeners may discover us, where we become visible, where donors are cultivated through person-to-person goodwill. Often these same folks appreciate handmade work. Buying crafts and art directly from the makers is like donating money to KPFA. You keep the movement going. You keep it alive. You get more than you give. It's a beautiful thing. I have to say that it's amazing that the Crafts Fair has been able to stay this strong during these times, that both the exhibitors and the visitors are willing to come back again and again, just like listeners do during the fund drives. Their numbers may be dwindling, but their loyalty is fierce because their values are strong. Thank you.
So Jan is willing to answer questions, and if there are board members who have questions, I'm happy to call on them and have Jan answer. Anthony, that's okay. And give Jan that microphone so she can respond. Thank you. Go ahead, Anthony.
Jan, thanks for being here. And you talked about a big attendance drop a couple years ago, followed by it apparently staying flat the past 2 years. Do you have rough numbers for like 08, 09, 10, 11, just so we can...
Yeah, I could work backwards. We had about 6,000 visitors in 2011. We had about, 7,500 and then maybe to 9,000. It declined in 2009. It declined in 2010, but we held the line in 2011.
Other questions? Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead, Andre. Thank you, Frank.
First of all, thanks so much for coming down today. I really appreciate it. And I also really want to thank you for your comments about economy, because I sit on the board of the flea market, of the Ashby Flea Market, and it's really hard. I think I share some of your some awareness of some of what it means to the vendors to be able to come and, be compensated. I guess one of the reasons why I kept bringing it up at these meetings, like, well, could we please talk about the crafts here, is because it's really part of a larger thing that I'm interested in, which is sort of the way that KPFA handles things like publicity, outreach, and it feels like the crafts here shouldn't necessarily be alone in doing that, because we have the Bob Baldock, all those events, and there's other development possibilities. And in these times, what I'm thinking is there's some way of, like, I see that a publicist was paid $11,000, and I'm not quite sure, but I'm trying to figure out, are there ways that we can set up something that serves more than just the crafts fair? You know, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, that there aren't separate media lists, that there's one kind of consolidated approach to doing that, so that volunteers and community members can easily plug into that effort and so forth. So I guess my first question, and I reserve the possibility of another, but I'd love it if you could talk to us about how the crafts fair builds on the infrastructure each year, and what is the outreach and publicity capacity. Is that clear?
I think what's interesting to me about your question is that KPFA is listened to by some people who come to the crafts fair, but not by everyone who comes to the crafts fair. So how do we make people aware? How do we grow public awareness about KPFA in all of our public events? That's a great question, and I'll get back to you. I'm not prepared to answer that question here. I mean, I'd love to sit down and talk at length to people about this and figure out what our strategy can be and actually plan and facilitate. So maybe I'll come back and talk to you again, or talk to you personally, or we can email back and forth and you can report to the board. So it's a project. What I'm hearing you say is, how can we expand the publicity project of the Crafts Fair into a bigger publicity project? Right, and it's going to take planning and strategy and work and dedication. It's going to take some effort. Yeah.
I guess I was just asking, what is that process like now for you with the Crafts Fair? How does it interact with other aspects of KPFA? Like, do you have one media list? Like, where do you get your media list, or did you build your own?
Well, the publicist has the media list, and they work. See, here's the deal.
Do they leave that with us?
No, it's their proprietary information, because that's how come they're getting paid as much as they are, is because they've, over the years that they've had their publicity efforts as part of their career building experience, they've cultivated their media lists, so it's proprietary.
I guess I'm wondering why we don't.
We don't have an in-house publicist. We don't have a development director. It would be commensurate to a development director. I think all roads lead to, we need a development director, period. period. And I'd be more than willing to help a development director. I helped on the Peace Awards 1 year. I produced the Peace Awards the following year. I started to work in development and cultivate relationships with major donors. It's exciting. I'd like to do more of it. I'd like to be in and I'm, after being at KPFA for 23 years, it's like, I know how to run the crafts fair. And some of the same applies to development. Some of the same getting out into the community applies to development as applies to producing the public event. The same with Bob's work, because you're dealing with people all the time in the community. Okay.
Okay. Andrea, are you satisfied?
Never.
Okay.
Somebody else can ask a question.
Okay. Well, I think that I'm willing to put anybody who wants to in touch with other people who want to talk about this, and Jan's willing to talk about it. So
I do have another question.
Well, let me give somebody else a chance. Go ahead, Sasha.
Hi, thank you very much for your really thorough report. And I wanted to point out to people that somewhere between $900 and $1,000 were taken in by the KPFA booth at the Crafts Fair in donations from people coming through. According to the letter from Perrine and also what I've heard from Perrine. So I just wanted you to be aware of that and point that out. I want to go back just to the question of publicity. So do you know where did we get publicity? I mean, I'm just sort of curious as to, you know, what kind of publicity we got and what you find successful and so
right.
forth.
There's advertising and there's publicity. So we do the most advertising we can with the dollars we have, and the publicity is largely the sum of money paid to the publicist who gets out into the world and does her best to get us stuff. And the way we gauge publicity is you Google the fair on the day of the fair, and however many hits come up, like you kind of like sift through yards and yards and yards and yards of Google responses, because anywhere where it appears in the media, it's going to come up on Google. And it's tedious because you have to go into hundreds and hundreds of reports of hits on Google, but that's how you figure it out. Like, those are real hits.
No, I've done publicity. I know how publicity is done. Did we get in the San Francisco Bay Guardian? Did we get in the Sunday Magazine section of the
Yeah, we
dailies?
Get individual.
Where did we get publicity?
Right. We get a lot of listings. We get the listings in those. What we really want are the feature articles. You want the feature articles.
Have we ever had... That's my question.
We had it once in the Examiner. You can't pay people to put that kind of stuff in. And but we keep trying, and we keep trying, and we keep trying. And once in a while, we hit the jackpot.
What year are we in with the Crafts Fair? How old?
41. We're 42 this year. Yeah. Yep. It's perennial. Thank you for your question.
I was just thinking in terms of, going for coverage based on its age, and I was hoping it was great number anniversary.
Every
year
single year,
up,
we do a new project. But, last year, we did creativity. Right. As you'll see on the KPFA Crafts Fair program. So we staged this whole juried competition for art, completely new, really wonderful. We're going to continue with that. And you spoke of Perrine.
Right.
Her email is included in the
yes.
stuff that I sent around. I'd like people to read that. She's an extra special human being, and she's so devoted to being at these public events for KPFA.
Sorry, Andrea. Andrea had a question. Yeah, she can use this.
Great report, and I love the Crafts Fair. I was wondering, in terms of development, somewhat picking up on Andrea, you're saying promotes cultural diversity, appeals to donors, and that kind. Any of the funds that come in, can they be targeted to any specific activity, like to use as a way to raise more awareness and to continue to reinforce cultural diversity donors, such as targeting this year at the Crafts Fair, we're going to try to raise some funds for a specific project, such as the apprenticeship program or something like that. It creates awareness about the station. It creates whole thing about developing a possibility of more interns and to generate more funds for them, just to build an idea of what the station is doing and to try to make that kind of link. Could that be a possibility to target a way to generate funds for that apprenticeship program, for example?
If it were conceived and if this was conceived as a separate project within the project, I would say yes. But the general monies that we collect just go into the general fund at KPFA. However, if, for instance, the apprenticeship program wanted to have stage a benefit at the crafts fair, I'd be more than happy to help them do that. That would be a wonderful thing. It's more work. It takes it takes a lot to do more than what people are already doing at KPFA.
Right, right.
But if people have the wherewithal, I'm an open door.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out how to get more monies to that because that's the heart of what we're about. Too.
The apprenticeship program could have a table in the nonprofit section, and they could solicit funds from visitors. Amnesty International doubles the amount of money that I charge them for a table because they make their funding for almost the entire year from donations they collect at the crafts fair.
Oh, wow.
The nonprofit organizations are awesome at the crafts fair. They're incredible. I charge $100 for a table. And they always send me a check signed by all these board members after the show with another $100 check in there and a letter. And it's like the potential's there.
So we could partner with some in order to generate these funds, partner with other
so
companies,
for instance,
different particular projects within KPFA?
Poor Magazine gets a free table at the crafts fair. I don't charge them the $100 and because they're poor and they're within KPFA. So they come in every year, and I don't have a report on what they get, you know, what how much they get in contributions or in building their constituency, but they come back every year. They seem really happy. So there's no reason why that couldn't be done elsewhere.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next person is Dan.
Thank you. Great report, Jan. Thank you. And Margie, my question really is to you. Are we supposed to do anything about this, or is this just an informational?
No one presented a motion prior to the meeting, so this was basically just a report and an opportunity for board members to ask questions, and I think that's what it is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. This is we simply asked Jan to come and make a report and be prepared to answer questions, and that's what we're doing. So, and no one notified us about a motion. Normally, we like to have motions in advance of the meeting. Okay. Any other questions? Oh, let's see. I'm sorry, Frank.
Hello. Thanks for your presentation, Jan. And as Jan knows, I help with the crafts fair through Mickey Mays and. Thank you for that. And a lot of the apprentices volunteer. Some get paid to watch the doors and stuff. So it's a good opportunity for the apprentices to get out and see how, like, a major operation happens and to help contribute to the crafts fair. So I thank you for that. And it would be great if we get a table out there. Like Jan says, though, it's, like, extra work just getting that together and doing that. And also a lot of times the apprentices help run the bakery. I think that changed this year, but it was still a great time when it happened. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, and that would be great to get us to put a table out there. And thanks for your presentation.
You're welcome.
Okay. Maria wanted to say something about the finances before we ended this discussion. We're almost out of time. I see your hand.
Somewhere behind the roses, yeah.
Yeah, I got you. I got you on the list. Go. Oh, all right. Maria wants you to go first, Andrea.
No, please.
Go ahead.
No, really.
Go ahead. Okay, well, I just want to, you know, the numbers speak for themselves here. It's a very simple, basically, profit and loss statement. And, you know, the difference between the budget to the actual was $262. So, number one, Jan should be applauded for keeping that. I mean, with the economy the way it is and the number of people, you know, reduced who do come to the Crafts Fair. Jan has done a great job at basically forecasting the fact that she has to cut back on expenses. It's sad that we can't have music. A lot of people always ask, where's the music? And, you know, it's just, that's the way it goes. I did want to comment, board member said, you know, when are we finally going to get this thing that we've been promised? Well, the Crafts Fair finished in December, or was it December? And the bills, you know, come in even into January. We're pretty much completely done. So this is about the soonest we could give a report. So here it is, and I hope you all enjoy it. And I do most certainly agree with the fact that I've always said that what KPFA is a PR person, because we have a lot of PR issues. So when we do get a development director, it certainly would be great to combine it with the Crafts Fair and be able to get more positive stuff out there for KPFA. I do also want to, you know, just give a shout out to Frank. I know he helps Jan a lot, and it certainly does not reflect on his timesheets. He volunteers a lot of time in the station and at the Crafts Fair. So thank you.
I want to reiterate, the Crafts Fair, we have 200 volunteers who help us with the Crafts Fair. It makes the texture of the event exquisite for the exhibitors and the visitors alike. It smooths out the rough edges. It makes it that much more of a pleasant environment. We have booth sitters. We have staff at the door. We have people who help load and unload. We have people come in from the community who love KPFA. They help decorate. And then at the end of the event, they help load out. And these are hours and hours of labor that people... It's an act of love. It really is a love bubble. And if you've never been, I'd love to have you come. And come as my guest. I'll send you some comp tickets.
Okay. Andrea.
Well, you know, I actually really enjoy the Crafts Fair, too, and I love the art. It's rare to get to go to those kind of events where there's such beautiful handcrafted stuff. But I guess there's a part of my brain that's saying, but what about the money? And it's saying, wow, that's a lot of volunteers, and it's a lot of money, and it's a lot that goes in. And for just slightly less than $25,000 that is raised, what's happening here doesn't seem like it's about fundraising. It feels like there's a lot that's about community building. There's a lot that's about you know, being supportive of ground level artists and supporting the arts, and those are absolutely good things to do. In these times, I'm thinking about the money, and I'm wondering, like, what if you were a development director instead of a Crafts Fair director? You know, what would we make more than $25,000 in a year based on that investment? You know, and these are dangerous questions, I know, because it tweaks on people's loyalties, and I'm not trying to mess with the Crafts Fair. I'm trying to think outside the box and trying to think, you know, with a wider reach. But if we hired a development director at half time for a full year, you know, what we lose in outreach would we gain through grants and fundraising in other ways? So I'm just curious what yours or other people's thoughts are on that, because... you know, I know that the GM apparently has been reluctant to make the, you know, this board has voted for a development director more than once, actually, and we don't have one. And I think it's a mistake. I think we desperately need one. But I don't know. I don't know how to quantify goodwill and the love and the good feeling that's generated, which I know it does for many people. But it's
well,
so I'm... Go ahead.
These are great questions. I think they're worthy of discussion. Further development at KPFA would build on the successes we already enjoy. In the Crafts Fair, it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, it's a good thing. It helps a lot of people. It grows the radio station in the community. It grows goodwill. It supports the arts. It supports our mission statement. So it's got those pieces in place. But did I hear you ask me, what if I was the development director? What would happen to the crafts fair? So it's, right. Yeah, I mean, I kind of heard you ask that. And
I did, and yeah. whether it's, I mean, I'm in no position to offer a job.
I don't want a job that doesn't have job security. So we'll work for health care and job security
But I'm just trying to get the cost benefit.
I'm sorry. We ran out of time for this item on the agenda about 3 minutes ago, and I'm really trying to wrap it up. So, Jan, I want to give you an opportunity to make any final comments, and I want to ask board members to, control themselves, maybe. Sasha has to say something. Okay.
I have a question, because I'm just looking. I hadn't looked at the profit and loss, and I just looked at it. And I'm really confused. It looks like it was a minus $24,000, but then when you actually add in salaries and benefits, it looks like it was a minus $46,000?
No.
Am I not reading this correctly? I mean, it's income, and it says loss before payroll was $74,000. And if you add payroll to that of $50,000, that's $120,000 in total.
When you see a positive number, it's income. It's a positive number.
It's
a positive
number.
It's not a loss.
All right, we have total expenses, and payroll was $121,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And total income, let me find this again.
It's $146,000.
Where's the 146? What line?
The top five.
Total proceeds was 146, and total income was, so it was a $24,000 profit.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Maria?
Okay, one quick thing. Andrea, I would love to have Jan as a development director. I think she'd be great. One thought that in terms of the economy of the station, yes, we need a development director. We have a great person here who does wonderful job at the crafts fair. I would hate to have her go anywhere else because she knows this thing in her sleep. But one thought to think of in terms of a budget for next year is we also have another person who used to be the development director for Pacifica. What if we increased the hours for certain people to be able to maybe share a job? I don't know. This is just an idea. But that would also eliminate benefits for additional people. That's a way to save. So you have people who know KPFA, who know their jobs very well. Why not,
Okay.
Okay, that's it.
So this is a matter of discussion for another agenda item. I'm just going to ask Jan if she wants to make any final remarks. She's done. I think we all want to thank you very much for coming. Great. Okay. All right, and now we're ready to move on. The next item on the agenda is the email policy. Members of the board saw the email I forwarded from Roger, who is here to talk about it, and you have before you a resolution which Craig sent out on email and also passed out this morning. Somebody needs to give...
I have a parliamentary inquiry.
A parliamentary inquiry. Okay, go ahead.
So this resolution is your resolution. You submitted the resolution. And I assume, will motivate it and... be involved in the debate. I'm new to the board here, and so it seems to me that if it's your resolution that maybe you should step aside being presiding during it.
That's fine with me. Sasha, that mean as vice chair, are you willing to chair that portion of the discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I think I would... My suggested order of business would be that we would hear from Roger first and then move into the discussion of the resolution, and at that point Sasha can take over.
Okay.
Okay?
Why don't you go ahead.
Okay. Frank.
Are we doing announcements at all?
Are we doing what?
Announcements at all. I had a couple announcements I wanted to make about...
Oh, announcements. Let's do them after this, okay?
Okay, just curious.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That got left off the agenda. No? Oh, we haven't gotten to it yet. I see. This item was moved up before announcements. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Roger. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank the board for having me here to discuss this today.
So the situation is we have an email and communications policy. It's not sufficient. It's not extensive. And it is currently being violated and has been violated in the past. That's why it's been communicated to the board and why I authored three additional amendments for the board's consideration. I think the policy's rationale stands, you know, on its own. The rationale is basically the privacy of our KPFA member database and what the members, the people who give money to KPFA, expect us to do with their email addresses in particular, but also their other information. KPFA doesn't have a set of privacy policies like most other organizations our size. We don't have them listed on our external website. We have them listed on the internal website, excuse me, for internal reference. Pacifica may or may not have a privacy policy. I wasn't able to find it on their website. One station in the Pacifica group does, KPFT in Houston. And with regards to their members' information, they say they will only exchange their member database information with other nonprofits, 501c3s. KPFA.org has an email. KPFA.org, you know, is our domain name, and that domain name has a score in various email databases, a spam-related score. One of the problems with giving our member database to companies like Constant Contact or the company that Andrea mentioned, Zoomerang, is that it can lessen our email reputation because Constant Contact and Zoomerang does share the database information that we give them with their affiliates. They have fairly extensive privacy policies of their own. Zoomerang and Constant Contact, I think their privacy policies are 3 pages or so. If you look at them, they're very similar. But they have loopholes that you can drive a truck through. So basically, they can share whatever information we give them with whoever they want to, basically whoever will pay them for our information. There is one clause that they often do abide by that's personally identifiable information, which you may see abbreviated as PII. They say they will not share personally identifiable information, but the way even those clauses are worded it's not legal tender by any order. And in the Zoomerang policy, which you guys probably didn't read, which Andrea sent, but I read part of it, it claims that it complies with the US-EU Safe Harbor Framework. Some of you may know that the European Union has very strong privacy laws. The Safe Harbor Framework is the US's exemption from those laws. So these groups do not meet EU law, and the EU-US Safe Harbor exemptions basically, they do not require one of the most important things of email lists, and that is that they be opted into the specific list that people's addresses are put on. In best practices, people always have to opt into those lists, and they have to confirm their opt into those lists. Neither Zoomerang nor Constant Contact require that. So it is out of compliance with the recommendations of, for example, EPIC, Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, D.C., which writes some of the policies that recommendations for sharing data of mailing lists in particular, but member lists also. It does require opt-out, so they do offer an opt-out. Constant Contact and Zoomerang do offer an opt-out, but that's really about all they do. Safe Harbor only requires that companies are self-certifying. That is, there is no organization that certifies them as being in compliance with standard or any documented privacy policies. Zumarang's privacy policy also mentioned Trustee, an organization in San Francisco that at one time did certifications. They have not for a long time. And currently, the only thing that an organization has to do to become Trustee compliant is to say that they comply with their own privacy policy. That's all you have to do. It's nothing, really. So neither lists handled by Zumarang or Constant Contact are, in my opinion, appropriate places for our member database. We have our own mailing list server. We can send many hundreds and thousands of times more emails than we would need to serve all of our member database. So our capacity in that respect is far more than we need. So I'm not really clear why Zumarang or Constant Contact are handling these email lists. Another downside, though, to the Constant Contact and Zumarang lists is that if you look at the email sent through those lists, all of the URLs point back to either Constant Contact, or I haven't seen the Zumarangs, but I presume they're the same, Zumarang. That is a way for those companies to track people reading their emails and to track every click. When you click on a URL in those emails, they track you. They add it to their database. And that's the database. That's why that database is so valuable to them, because every one of those clicks is monetizable. That means they can make money off of it by selling our clicks, our members' clicks, to other organizations. None of those links, you know, you can read it in text in your browser, and it says kpfa.org/, and then the rest of the URL. But when you click on it, you might not see it, but it first goes to Constant Contact, and then Constant Contact forwards the HTML request to KPFA. So they track all of those clicks. They track when images are loaded, when you open the email in your browser. They track when you forward emails to someone else, and they sell that information. So it's, in my opinion, you know, not just the European Union's privacy legislation, but in my opinion, that is not consistent with what I believe KPFA members expect that we will be doing with their information. And we, you know, there's no real upside to giving our databases to those companies. We don't make any money from it. In fact, we give them money. At least in the case of Constant Contact, we pay them instead of using our own databases. So the three problems I have with the current policy, the three shortcomings I'd like the members to consider these amendments to our current policy are, one, well, actually, Barbara, I guess you sent these out. So I don't know if the rationale has been fully explained, though. There are three points. One, we do not, and I'd like for us to adopt these three additional policies because, if I can understand my own writing here, we do not need to share our listeners' web browsing or email reading habits with anyone. We do not need to deal with organizations that make money by sharing that data, and that the list messages that have been sent out are also not available to the KPFA staff. So we're not receiving them. We don't even know what's in them for the most part. I guess within the station, the Morning Mix group has received the most recent emails, but only 8,000 members of the member database have received the emails. I think it's a very good thing that we have an electronic newsletter, like Les mentioned. But I think it can be published in a much more transparent way. So that's what these three clauses are for. If you guys have any question about our existing email policy or the three clauses, I'd be glad to answer your questions.
Sasha, do you want to? I think maybe now's the time for you to take over. So this people okay. have questions.
Do it. Yes, exactly. Does anybody have any questions? Dan?
So just for clarity, or at least for information, can you back up a little bit? I'm not sure what the KPFA email list is and who has the ability to utilize it to send out emails.
Sure. Well, we have about a dozen email lists altogether, but the specifically email list we're talking about today is the KPFA member database. Those are all the email addresses of everybody who has given money to KPFA. Most of our email lists are internal. A couple of them are external. KPFA-General, for example, has over 4,000 members, and there are various other lists mostly used internally, and they are on our own list server. So all these policies are applied to those. But violations in the past and currently, we're not using our own list server to send to our members, to those people who have given us money.
So how many email addresses do we have on the donor list?
I'm not sure exactly how large it is altogether. I know that 8,000 people of that list did click when they joined online, did click, the checkbox that says we can send them information. That's not a confirmed opt-in. That is an opt-in, though. So those are the ones we're sending to the newsletter to.
And who else besides the newsletter, I guess, which is under the authority of the station manager, who else has the ability to send emails to those 8,000 donors?
Chris Stellick is basically the person who owns the database with those. I'm not aware of any other emails being sent to that list.
So, if the LSB wanted to send a message to that list, could we do that? Or whose permission would we?
Presumably. I guess it would be under the require the approval of the GM.
Okay. Thank you.
It hasn't been done since I've worked at KPFA, so I don't know.
So can I understand this for a moment? That particular, the email list you're talking about are people who've gone to the website.
Given money.
Given money and also given permission to send them email.
Right. It used to be permission to send them the folio. But, it's reasonable to expect they'd want to receive a folio-like newsletter in email too.
But it's also new people because when the folio was around, they weren't clicking
right
online to make donations.
Right.
So it's a total of about 8,000. Okay. Mal?
I want to see if I understand the facts now. We have this list available to send notices to members about programs. That is done in-house. It doesn't have to be shipped off to anybody, Conant or whatever. Do I understand correctly that the interim general manager is not using that list to send out these monthly or so announcements?
No, he is not using the in-house list server.
That's right. And
he's
why,
using...
All right. Do you know why that's happening?
I don't, and I don't really know that I'd want to speculate. I think the policy issue stands on its own.
Well,
and there are all sorts of political reasons, that come into play that I have no idea, what the motivations might be.
Yeah, but I'm not worried about motivations. I'm just trying to understand why our ability to send out these emails is not being used.
It's a very good question. I've asked that question, but I've not gotten an answer.
All right. Thank you.
Can I just follow up with a question on that? Constant Contact offers you basically desktop publishing, right? It kind of lays out a format, it's decorative, et cetera. Do we have that on our listserv as well?
No, we format this, for example, the stuff that Miguel sends out to the KPFA generalist, we format ourselves. So we don't use the nice tools that Constant Contact has.
Yeah.
But we do have tools that we could do something similar with.
So let's see. Janet, you were next.
Yeah, I'm curious when the email policy, the current email policy that this resolution would add to, I think, was made, and by whom and when.
Well, I've authored most of it. We had, or reauthored most of it. We had a email and communications policy before I came to work for KPFA 3 years ago. And I added probably half of the stuff that's in the bulk email and group email account section. These two sections are about two-thirds of the policy itself. I guess you guys have the entire policy from the internal wiki, is that correct? Okay. So the first part of that policy, if I have it here myself, states that KPFA employees, contractors, volunteers, or others using KPFA email services must not. And then there are a list of bullet points. Yeah, most of those were already in place at least 3 years ago.
And then, so who actually oversees this policy? Who's responsible for that?
Probably myself. I don't do anything exclusively, but Michael Yoshida obviously approves everything, and working with HR and Maria too. We have everyone look at it, everything, and make suggestions and approve everything before it's made internal policy.
And the general manager is also part of that?
Yes.
And if somebody wanted to utilize the email process or the email with the KPFA server, what process would they go through in order to make that happen?
Well, for the generalist, for the member database to send to the KPFA members, it would presumably be the same process that people used to send to KPFA-general. Someone composes a message and sends it, and then that message is reviewed by the moderators. Nothing just goes through the server. Every message to those large lists is moderated and approved. The list of approvers right now, I think Maria approved some of the lists. I'm the list manager, so I manage all of the lists. Michael Yoshida, the Chief of Engineering, and Antonio, who does all of our social media, we moderate the lists that are moderated.
And how is that group that moderates determined? I mean, who is it self-selecting or how?
Within the people who understand the software, the mailman software, and manage that software, I guess it's handed down by convention. So everyone who deals with the computer networks and who deals with HR policies does have a say in that and does have the option of managing those lists.
Okay, going down the list, we have Laura, Craig, and Henry. So, Laura?
Just for the sake of institutional memory, I think, Roger, before you, there was an electronic newsletter that was put together, or that was organized by Michael Manucheri under LEMLEM. And at that time, I think they sent an email to everyone, including staff, to opt in or out. So I don't know if you're using, if the list that's they have now was started from that previous list or not?
The member list or the staff list? You mean
the list that the newsletter is being sent out to now.
That I don't know.
And Craig?
I actually had my main question, but I have a preliminary question that follows from something you mentioned earlier. The list of moderators who review these, is it correct that the messages that have been coming out from the general manager have not been going through that review process?
No, everything that the general manager has sent through the KPFA internal server, that's all. I mean, we don't stop anything. We just moderate generally. I think we have stopped or not approved one message, but we generally just make sure it's not you know, some Trojan on someone's computer trying to send to the list, because there are a lot of recipients, and all the email that goes through those lists does affect the kpfa.org domain reputation.
Okay. So I'm sorry, my main question here, we actually, Mal and Sasha and I served on a committee that looked into a problem that happened about a year ago with email issues. And one of the things about using these commercial servers like Constant Contact and Zoomerang and these others, as I understand it, is that we take, or somebody would take, a group of emails and put it on that server and then send the emails, you know, using that mechanism that the company provides. And my question has to do with security of emails, because once they're out there, it seems like they can be downloaded by anybody else who has the password. I could put all of KPFA's emails on the Constant Contact server and give Frank the emails, and he could log in and download them. And it, so it seems like there's a real security issue there with those email addresses. And I'm wondering if, you know, what your take on that is, and whether that's been a problem and so forth.
Most of my take is too technical for the board. I can go into it if you'd like, but that is a very valid concern. Logging is another concern. Complaints are another concern. There's all sorts of concerns that are out of our control when we don't run the list server that the emails are sent from. So, yeah, it definitely is a concern, not just privacy.
Can I follow up on that? Then if somebody has uploaded the information, if there is a response from somebody receiving that email, KPFA also would not know about that. Is that correct? In other words, if somebody had sent out an email to a group of KPFA subscribers and I didn't want to receive any more and I wrote back saying, take me off your list, in fact, the only person would know would be the person with the password who could log into Constant Contact.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Does everybody, by the way, have a copy of Margie's proposed resolution?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And let's see. Henry, you are next.
Thanks. A little bit of follow-up on Laura's point. There definitely was an opt-in sign-up specifically for a KPFA newsletter. I know because I checked in my old email archives, and I did receive a confirmation when I signed up for that list in 2007, I believe it was. On the other hand, I did not receive the recent general manager's newsletters, even though I opted in. So I'm not sure what that tells us about which list is what, but I had to sign up again to start receiving those.
So, Henry, you confirmed? You checked the box that
I have donated off.
And then you received an email requesting your confirmation?
No, actually, at the time when I first signed up, it was not connected with donating on the website. I'm not sure I'm not sure how the process began. I don't frankly remember all I did. I did find the confirmation in my email archive that I had signed up, and I have also donated many times on the website since then, and I still didn't get the newsletter. So. As I think we have seen before, there's a certain there's some things get waylaid in the email management. I have several questions, so bear with me; they're not too long. When you described the origins of this policy, it wasn't clear to me. Was this policy approved by a general manager, and if so, which one?
Yes. It was communicated to the general manager. I don't have I'd have to go back through my email record and see if I got a specific approval.
Which general manager would that have been?
It would have been every time a change has been made. So Lem, I don't know if Amit probably didn't review any changes. Ahmad probably didn't either. And the most recent ones I've sent to Andrew. But I haven't received.
So you send the changes, or you send the whole policy,
I mean,
or You send just changes, or when the new person comes in, they get the policy to review? Is that what you say?
Well, yeah, this policy is in the HR packet that every employee signs. And in fact, if you look at the policy itself on the wiki, there is at the bottom a place to sign and approve or say that you are will abide by the policy.
Thanks. And I want to also follow up on the two points from earlier comments. One is about formatting, and the other is about the moderation process you described. If the general manager decided to take the initiative to send an electronic newsletter to as many emails as he or she, he in this case, could scrape up from of KPFA listeners, is there a straightforward procedure by which he could have that either a template that he could use to format it, or some straightforward process to get a nicely formatted document produced? That's the first part. And the second part is, did I understand you to say that if that happened, then the content of that newsletter would be subject to the review by yourself, Antonio, and the other people that you mentioned?
Yeah, let me address that last point first. Would be subject to review, I don't know if that's accurate to say that. By moderating, that only means that we're affirming that it's not spam, that Andrew actually wrote it, that it doesn't contain viruses and Trojans, that kind of stuff. That's the only thing we do. We click on a box that says approve, and the mail goes out of the queue. As far as the formatting tools, you know, to make it look good, you can do that with Microsoft Word. Probably that's not as nice a tool as what Constant Contact has available online, but there are tools like that available, and Miguel, I don't know if he has access to them or not, like Adobe Illustrator, and there are a few of them that are specific to HTML websites and HTML emails.
Great. One more question, and then I'll comment, and then I'll shut up. Last question is, have you had any discussion with Andrew about using the KPFA servers for the recent... KPFA newsletters?
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
I don't know how much I want to say about that. You know, I've explained all this to Andrew, and he's also reviewed it with Pacifica lawyers, KPFA lawyers. They've told him, what he's told me, this all I know, they've told him that he can send to those lists without breaking any laws because we are a nonprofit. Right. I'm not sure what the law, you know, I don't think it gets into any legal problems. Whatever Andrew wants to do, I'm sure it's going to be legal. But, I have relayed all this information to Andrew personally in his office.
Okay, just a closing comment from me. I think you've raised, you know, some valid issues about the use of the commercial Constant Contact and those people. And I appreciate your doing that. I also think the larger picture here is that KPFA historically has been extremely lax in using modern tools to communicate with its listeners, and that in the big picture, Andrew's initiative to create a newsletter that looks nice and conveys some useful information and improves morale and so on is on the whole a very positive thing, and that we should look at this discussion in that context. And finally, I would say that if ever there wasn't, you know, over the years, many, many things that some people on this board have tried to suggest have been denounced as micromanagement. And it seems to me that the details of the station's email policy, if ever there was something that was a management issue and not a governance issue, this seems to me a prime example of something that should be left to management.
Henry, can I sort of ask you to stop, because that seems to me like it's more of a conversation for us to have around the resolution rather than in asking
Fair enough.
Questions about
I'm finished.
Policy.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.